be here to be together. I also, while I'm in here, standing here, I'd like to thank you for having with my son Bob, a Catholic preacher, but here also, we lived over in East Cincinnati, and he's been so helpful. And I'm grateful to you for that you've come. Bob is now preaching a place called Oak Mountain, a little bit south of Birmingham. The topic that was assigned to me was the first time of our study of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And there is no way that I would be able to cover all that is said in that chapter in the time that we have allotted together. And so what I thought I would do, I have picked out five points in it that I thought would be important. And then we will look at that. I have divided it up something like this. First section of it is verses 1 through about 6, which deal with the matter of the relationship between a man and woman as they cohabit together. And then begin with about verse 8, and going down through about verse, all of that verse 10 or 11, we look at the part that talks about where he said, under the matter that I give charge, yet not out of the Lord, that the wife not to depart from her husband. And then I thought we would look at the relation that exists when a man and a woman are married, one of them is a Christian, and the other one is not a Christian. And then look at that part of it that tells people to abide in the calling way that they're called. And then finally, look at chapter 7 and verse 27, where Paul said, art thou bound to a wife, seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife, seek not a wife. They simply gives a great outline of some of the things that we're going to talk about. There's a lot of it we will not even mention because we don't have the time. But there are a number of things that might come up in the chapter that we will not cover because I noticed a number of other people have covered them in other lessons. And another thing that I say probably will not be covered by them. But again, concerning the things whereof he wrote, and then he talks about some answers to what is evident of their question. Strangely enough, we don't have questions. We do have the answer. And it must be that we do not need the question because God did not see fit to preserve them. And it may just be that the answers that we have are all that we need, and we're dealing not only with specific questions that were asked by the church in Corinth, but also we might even have broader application than the specific question that they answered. And so we begin to say concerning the things where you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But because of fornication, for each man have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband. But the husband of the man is under the mark of view, and likewise also the wife to the husband. The wife hath not power over her own body, but the husband. Likewise also the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. It's already on to one another. Except it be by consent for a season that you may give yourselves to prayer. He takes us to fasting and prayer. And they be together again that Satan gets you not because of your incontinence. As you can see from this, it talks about the sexual relation that should exist in marriage between a man and a woman. He began to say it is good for a man not to touch any woman. And I take that to be in the sense of cohabiting together. It's good for a man not to do it. He doesn't say it's best. He doesn't even say it's better. He doesn't say it's required for a man not to do that, but it is good. He would simply say it's all right. He's not saying it's mandatory, because obviously that's not the case. And when you look at it like that, and remember what Jesus said in Matthew 19:10 over the apostle, when Jesus pointed out how strict the marriage law was. The apostle said, if the case of a man is over his life, it is not expedient to marry. Jesus said, not every man can receive this thing. Not every man can handle that. There are eunuchs that were born eunuchs. There are eunuchs that were made eunuchs for men. There are eunuchs that made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of God's sake. Not everybody can handle that, in other words. And so Paul said, to avoid fornication, let each man have his own life. In other words, it's all right. For a man not to touch a woman, But not everybody can live righteously in that kind of condition. So it is that God has made provision for them. And that is to avoid fornication. That each man has his own wife, but each woman has her own husband. That incidentally will show that the Catholic's idea about marriage is not right. Or their idea about sexual relations is not right. It is their idea that women belong to use, proper use for them, is to procreate children. That is what Paul said. Paul doesn't say they speak man is on Christ so they can procreate children, but rather so that they will avoid fornication. God made us a certain informed desire. That of food, of drink, and as he says here, that of cohabiting with someone of the opposite sex. There's nothing wrong with those desires. It's nothing wrong with a person getting hungry. But God does not allow him to steal to satisfy his hunger. He has a law made by which that hunger can't be satisfied. Nothing wrong with him being thirsty. But what they allow him to drink later to satisfy his thirst. And in the same way, there's not anything wrong with the sexual desire. And God has given him all things for that to be fulfilled. And that means it's in marriage. And so he said to avoid immorality, that each man have his own wife, that each woman have her own husband. Which incidentally would do away with the idea of polygamy. It's hard to believe that there are brethren who take the position that in parts of the world where polygamy is legal, if a man showed up at a full time, they could not refuse him fellowship in the church. That's hard to believe. And yet that is a plenty of prayer for people having said that. But here it said that each man have his own wife. He's not to have a wife that he shares with some other man. Each woman has her own husband. She's not to have a husband that she shares with some other woman. Each one has her own. And I always thought here he says in verse 3 that the husband and the wife are due. And likewise also the wife or husband, which again gets it. Opposes the Catholic idea that the only proper sexual activity is for the purpose of creating children. And that is true. Here it says that it's something give her and give him. And he does not have power over his body, nor she over her. And so he said, it brought him on one the other, except it be by consent for a season. Several things we might mention that then. Number one, it is right and proper. For them to engage in those activities and for them not to. First of all, notice it must be mutually agreeable, accepted by consent, and then it is temporary or season. In particular, the thing that he is talking about here, though, is not merely a temporary cessation of that, but that you may give yourself to prayer. It has a religious connotation and not just on that word, but it's anyhow. Paul is simply saying here that if you do, disarm one another, Satan will tempt you, and it may just be that you will yield to that temptation. And so it's him to advise you about how to handle themselves in relation to cohabiting with each other, and to show that there is a right thing to do, a wrong thing to do, a proper thing that is to be done. But in verse 6, he said, this I say by way of concession, not commandment, and I take that to refer to verse 7. Obviously, what he has said before is required, but now what he's about to say is not required when he said, I would have all been for even as I myself. And just what that might be, and I'm not exactly sure of what I was involved in. Other than in verse 8, where he talked about the unmarried and the widows, and Paul was either unmarried or a widow, I mean, they never had been married, or else he was a widower. Whichever it was, I don't know. I would have made that clear by the time he wrote it. He was not in a married condition. So he said, I'm giving this advice. It's a concession, it's not a commandment. I wish all of them were like I am. And he did not have the need of it as a marriage or a remarriage. But then, having said all of that, I think we can get to the next section. Begin with verse 8. To the unmarried and the widows, he said, it is good for them if they abide even time, or if you're unmarried or whatever, or whatever, I don't know which. But he said, they have enough conscience to let them marry. Or it's better to marry than to burn. Good speech sort of makes a play on words. But instead, it is better to marry than to burn. And of course, that basically is what that's talking about. Burn with lust. it is better to marry than to burn your blouse for somebody and not marry him. So you say, if you cannot contain yourself, then marry. Just like Paul of Jesus said when he talked about Judah. If they can receive it, they receive it. If there are those that cannot receive it, then the option for them ought to be that they get married. And so he said, if they have not come, they should let them marry. But for the married, and he's just giving advice to the unmarried. And that gives advice to the married. But so have it, I can charge him out of the Lord. Let the wife depart not from her husband. But should she depart, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. And if her husband leave not his wife. The American Standard puts Lord's going to verse 11 in parentheses. So that what he would be saying is this. Under the man I give charge him not out of the Lord. Let the wife depart not from her husband. And that the husband not leave his wife. And then he added the part of the princess of the program. I confess that when he said that the woman is not the part of her husband, that he is not talking about simply separating. But he's talking about divorce. He's talking about divorce when he said, the Lord gives a commandment. When he said, you're not out of the Lord. I take it that you say the Lord dealt with this personal work. And Paul is not saying, as he comes up with it later, I say not the Lord. He's not saying he's uninspired. He's just that the Lord did not deal specifically with verse 12, what is contained there. But he did have to put it in verse 10. And so he said to the married, I give charge, that the wife not depart from her husband, but should she depart, let her remain unmarried. And when she departs, from all separation. Look at it, verse 9. Verse 9, if you remember, says, "Destroy ye not one the other, except it be by consent or reason." And whatever behavior of man or woman married in this way, separate, don't divorce them, they certainly are dissolving each other. And that's the very thing that this says they are not to do. So look at that, verse 9. Now, read verse 11, which says, "If she should part, let her remain unmarried. That does not give her permission to depart, just so long as she remains unmarried. Not anymore, man, when Jesus said he commands sin, verse 2, I'm writing to you that you do not sin, but if you hand in him as sin, we have a remedy for the Father. He's not saying it's all right to sin before he's not handed you. That wouldn't work for you. You have no right to be forgiven of sin because you have somebody to intercede for it. They couldn't follow just because we have an intercessor to be here. They would not obtain the God's history because of sin. And in the same way, when he said, if she departed, let her remain unmarried, that does not mean he's giving her permission to do wrong. And it's not strange that she has two options, and both of them are equally acceptable to God. He's not saying that at all. One reason we know that is because it says in verse 10, the Lord commanded, don't leave, don't divorce. He could not be saying, but if you do, it's all right as long as you do this or do that. No, he said, don't do it. So therefore, what he said to say is, if a woman does divorce, if she's already divorced, she does not have a third option. She may command a woman to divorce as a man. Just literally speaking, she can stay single. She can go back to her husband. Or she can marry somebody else. Paul said number 3 is completely hallowed. Because if she does, as Jesus said, she commits adultery. Therefore, we know that she does not have the right to marry somebody else. She can remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. Now, if a woman tries to be reconciled to her husband and cannot, then she remains unmarried. It may be legal marriage. It may be that he's already married somebody else. There may be a lot of reasons that they cannot be reconciled, in which case she must remain unmarried. And so I'm convinced that it's not talking about separation as we generally think of it. When you think about that, here's the thing that I thought of. If verse 11 gives permission to separate, under what condition are we separating? We know about the board. The only scriptural cause that people make divorce and remarry is for fornication. One of the causes, the cause or causes, one which a person may separate, and where would you read them in the Bible? I would know where to read those conditions. Not for that. If a person separates, it will leave them in a position to not fulfill their responsibilities. For example, a woman is told to be in subjection to her husband. If she refuses to live with him, she's certainly not in subjection to him. So he is able to provide for her, but he's not good at that if she doesn't live with him. It will not hold on to her from each other. And should we include that in my saying pre-marriage? In other words, here's a man and a woman that are getting married. Should you talk to him and say, "My daughter, your longest way to separate him from her"? Should we tell him that? No matter what it might be, you're going to fulfill and separate. That wouldn't work for you. All we can read the conclusion that what Paul is talking about here is that of divorce. And we know that he must say it's all right to divorce. And it's not okay, he's going to get married. Well, you remember in 1919, the question came up, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And Jesus answered that question when he said, "What's God joined together? But not that for a sinner." And so here he said, the Lord commanded, don't depart. He didn't say the Lord commanded, don't depart the letters. He said, don't depart. And so in that context, I think that what he's talking about is that of divorce. And he's not saying it's all right to divorce. And as long as you don't get mad at somebody else, or else be reconciled to your husband. Having said that, we look at the next one he talks about people who are Christian and married to those that are not Christian. So he said to the rest, "Say, I am the Lord. And it says they wiped his mouth for so long as I never lived. Now think about this. Some people argue that the word bondage in verse 15 really means bound in marriage. And just like the word bound does in verse 39, fellas, think that. Verse 39 says his wife is bound so long as her husband lives. But verse 15 says the brother or sister is not bound when he leaves. And that doesn't fit. And the point they were making is this. And that is, in verse 39, what he is saying here, a person is bound, a woman is bound as long as he lives. It does not say he is, she is bound until he leaves. But that's what verse 15 says. Verse 15 says she's not going to bondage when he leaves. But verse 39 says she's bound as long as he lives. And from that we can conclude that it's not talking about the same thing. Bounded in verse 15 and bound in verse 39 are the same. Bound in verse 39 refers to bound in marriage. Bounded in verse 15 means a slave. She is not his slave. He doesn't own her. She is not his property. And therefore, she need not have the idea that since he said, you either give up Christ or me, I've got to stay with him because I belong to him. Now, what he's saying is you belong to God. You're not slave of that man, and so you just let it go. Sometimes people will say, well, if I were to stay with him, I believe I could convert him. The next verse says, how do you know what you would say to your husband? How do you know what you would say to your wife? In other words, he says, you give up me, a non-believer, or you give up the Lord. She said, well, I can believe the Lord, I believe I converted. This verse said, how do you know? You're going to say it. Therefore, don't give up the Lord. If that man wants to go, you let him go. Don't you try to hold on to him. He is. You're not under bondage. You could say the word bondage is a word that's perfect passive. In the Greek, we said the man's going to get placed back here with the results last year from now. And he said that didn't happen because you're not that way. Simply says you are not in bondage now, and you were not in bondage when you left. And in that sense, you never were in bondage. And so when it says you're not under bondage, another point we should make. It says absolutely nothing about the right to remarry. All it says is the unbeliever apart, rest apart, the brother or sister is not under bondage, and it says nothing about and therefore you have the right to remarry. It doesn't say that. One must import that into the text. The text doesn't say that at all. And so there is no right given here to remarry when a person is deserted. And that's an argument a lot of people make. They say that Paul gave an additional reason to what the Lord gave. You remember the Lord? The Lord said, whoever divorces his wife except it be for fornication, and marry another committed adultery. They say that Paul gave an additional reason. Well, if he did, then except that man sin. And Jesus said, whoever puts away his wife except for fornication, he said, there is one cause and but one cause and involvement among you and another. And it's not true, there is one and but one cause. We have two causes. And that would mean that what Paul did was contradict what the Lord said. And we know that is not the way it is at all. Except means you can only give someone his fornication. That means there's not a second reason. And I said that Paul here is giving an additional reason, just is not true. You're denying what the Lord said about it. Let's see. Well, I have to say back over in chapter 7, verse 10, where it said, if the woman departed, let her remain not married. Sometimes people will say, well, that's just not fair. How can a person be expected to remain unmarried? Well, suppose that a man divorces his wife. She's not guilty of fornication, and he's not either. He just doesn't want to live in a married condition, and so he divorces and he never remarries. She certainly can't do that. She can live single, and the Lord expects her to live single, and though it may be hard on her, she can do that. And the Bible makes it clear that you can. But then we have this idea that Paul brings up in verse 17. Only as the Lord distributed each man as God called each man, so in full. And so ordain I all the churches. Was any man called being circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. As any man called uncircumcision, let him not be circumcised. And so he said in verse 20, let each man abide in that calling where he was called. Now, what a lot of people do is they read that and say, well, here you are in a bad condition. Maybe it doesn't exactly square with what Jesus said in Matthew 19:9, but this says abide in the calling where you're called. When you hear the gospel, even though you may be married to somebody that Matthew 19:9 says you will not be, you can abide in that calling, you can abide in that arrangement, you can abide in it, for it says that each man abide in the calling where he was called.
As reference primarily to the present distress, whatever that was.
many people are of the persuasion that it talks about extreme persecution. Now, a lot of what it says here would fit that now. Or none of it is exactly it, I don't know. But the rumors they give would fit the present stress, and the one before that would not. It is in this connection that he says, art thou bound unto wine? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from wine? Seek not wine. But if thou art, thou hast not sinned in the word, virgin Mary, she has not sinned, yet such like tribulation in the flesh, and I will strike. That's a way of saying, if you've got a wine, trouble are going to come, don't try to get rid of it. If you don't have one, you're going to have trouble, don't try to get one. And he goes on to explain why. Down in verse 32, I would have you for today. He that is unmarried is careful for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. He that is married is careful for the things of the Lord, how he pleases wife. Now he's not saying at home. That's right, that's where it ought to be. A man ought to be careful for the things of his wife, how to please her. But during this, as he says, tribulation and persecution, he's going to have a problem. Trying to be faithful to God and also to take care of her. And so he's got that divine lawyer, and a man is not going to have that problem. And so during that present distress, Paul is saying that it is really better that you don't get married. Now we know that's not the general rule, because in 1 Timothy 4, the same apostle said that when people don't get to marry, they have departed from the faith. And so the rules that he gives here, the points that he's making, of course, thereby dealing with primarily that present stress. But it is in verse 27, where it says, art thou bound unto wine, seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from wine, do not seek a wine. But shouldest thou marry, thou hast not sinned. Now, what that is, what people say, what that says is, if you're loosed from a wine, you can marry and not be guilty of sin. And they mean by that, here is a man and a woman who married. The man is guilty of adultery and fornication. The woman divorces him, and she is loose from him. If it is said she is loose from him and free from him, he cannot be joined to her. If she is loose from him, he is loose from her, and therefore the guilty party, the one who was divorced because he was guilty, is free to marry, and Paul said so here. That's the argument, but sure, that's not true. In the first place, surely the passage is not to be taken without any restriction. It says, art thou bound unto wine, do not seek to be loosed. Without any restriction. What if a man is married and bound to a wife, and he discovers that she is a harlot and will not repent? Paul says in chapter 6, in verse 15, know you not that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take away the members of Christ and make them members of the harlot? God forbid. Can I tell you, Paul is saying, a man that is a Christian, who is married to a woman and finds out that she's a harlot and she will not wait, he cannot live with her and please God, because if he does, he takes a member of Christ and joins him to a harlot. Later says the word harlot means one who engages in sexual activity either for money or lust. It's not just money, it is money for lust. So here is a man joined to a woman, and she is guilty and will not repent. Paul is saying in chapter 6, don't live with her. Divorce her. Divorce her because of her fornication, and therefore, when it says in verse 27, if you're bound to wife, don't seek to be loose, certainly not seek that any kind of reservation at all, and the verse is children. But any kind of limitation on your children. And it says, art thou loose from the wife, do not seek a wife. What does it mean to be loose from the wife? I'd like you to think a little while about pronouncing restriction and limitation. That are all that they don't marry. What are they? Under the Old Testament, nobody that was near a king, you could not marry somebody that he was into. You could marry your father, your mother, your sister, a daughter, an aunt, an uncle. You could marry them. Here's a person that's never been married. They're free, they're loose. Can't you just marry anybody? No. You could marry a father. Could marry a mother. Could marry a sister. And not only that, think about that. In the sense that you do not have a wife, and therefore, please, we can do whatever you please, not any more so. There are a number of Moses, they could not marry you, so they could marry you. They could marry a priest if they met a boy. They could marry a priest if they had somebody else. And if you're right, I call the woman loose from the second husband, which one completely loose is part of the first husband. So when it says, are you loose from a wife in the scripture, in a general way, just like in 1 Corinthians 7, we must understand that to have some restriction on it. And so, these are most of the things that I run across as I listen to people talking about 1 Corinthians 7. That is, it has to do, the first part, with sexual relation between a man and his wife. It has to do a little bit later with the divorce and what to do about it. It deals also with being Christian man or non-Christian. If there are some arguments to that you can find whatever color you're in, I know a color. He divorced his wife, or she divorced him because he's guilty of adultery. And he then married somebody else, made a confession, and said, "That boy, he's the one who got down the second, because evidently I combined the color